Welcome to the Swanson Writers Project podcast. My name is John.
And Marin.
And we are interviewing Dr. Eric Dinnerstein, author of What Elephants Know.
As a scientist, why do you write fictional stories? Do you write nonfiction too?
Good question. Yes, I do. In fact, my first two books were nonfiction, and I also wrote a technical science book about rhinos that has a lot of science in it and a lot of numbers. And I enjoyed doing that, but I felt like I wanted to reach a much larger audience, and I especially wanted to reach kids. And so that really propelled me to write a middle grade novel, so for intermediate school students.
What inspired you to write about Nandu and an elephant stable?
Well, I lived next to an elephant stable for 5 years when I was working with the Smithsonian Institution as a biologist in Chitwan National Park in Nepal. We had our own stable of 5 elephants, all females, and then there was a government elephant stable of about 25 elephants just down the road. And while I was there, they decided to turn one of the stables, or create a new stable, and turn it into a breeding center for elephants, because they realized that, as in the book, there's a problem with trying to get domesticated elephants, in that there's a ban on capturing them from the wild, which is a good thing, and so the only alternative is to start breeding domesticated elephants. So that's where it also figures into the book.
Are any of your characters based on real people or real animals?
Yes. It's all made up, but Nandu himself was, when I was first in Bardia, which is what I call the borderlands in the novel, I met this, at that time, 25-year-old man who became my jungle guide and my best friend and taught me how to track tigers, and I just made him much younger, at 12 years old, like what he would have been like and if he was an elephant driver. And then the head of the elephant stable, Suba Sahib, he is modeled after the head of the elephant stable in the other park I worked in.
How do you think living in another country influenced how you write?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think that Nepalis love to tell stories, and that's basically what writing is telling stories. And so I think that inspired me, is that a number of these events that happened in the book were built around, or a piece taken here or there from some of the stories I heard, and then woven into a fictional presentation.
What kind of research did you do for this book? How long did it take for you to write?
Wow. Well, I think I've had this book in my head for about 40 years, but I had to be a scientist in between, and I wrote these other nonfiction books. And I think I always wanted to write this book, but I just didn't, the time wasn't right, I didn't have the time, and I probably wasn't ready to write fiction in the way that I did it. When I first wrote this book, the very first draft was probably 120,000 words, and the final draft, what was published, is about 55,000 words. And so that's quite a difference. And a lot of the story didn't apply, or it was perhaps written at more geared towards more adult or older teenagers, and I realized that's not what I wanted to do, so I basically started over and wrote it as a middle grade novel. So it took me about 2 years in the process. But I've probably been thinking about this book for 40 years.
What books do you recommend about the natural world?
Oh, well, I think it depends what people are interested in. And the age group, too. I think that for younger readers, obviously it starts out with the Jungle Book. And in some ways, my novel, I think it was like as a modern-day Jungle Book. For this part of the world, I still go back to Rudyard Kipling as one of my favorite authors, and I think my hero, Nandu, is more similar to his character Kim in the novel Kim, which is one of my favorite novels, than anybody else. In terms of books about wildlife, there's wonderful books by the biologist George Schaller, but it's for a bit older audience, maybe high school and early college. I'd have to think more about books for 7th and 8th grade.
What advice do you have for writers?
Oh, I would say write because you are compelled to write. This is what you want to do without any concern at all about what will happen after. And write to please yourself and one or two other people. And don't worry about the audience that's out there. Write what you know about and what moves you. And try hard to develop characters that appeal to people and go through changes over the course of the novel so that you can be with them on their journey.
What advice do you have for kids who want to help animals?
Oh, well, that's a great question. And the first one, I think, is to educate yourself as much as you can. So the way that you make change is by becoming, if not an expert, at least familiar with the topics at hand. And so learning as much as you can about the biology and the conservation of certain species is really important. And then one of the most effective things that we can do as citizens is write, email, call our congressional representatives to make sure that they pass laws that help protect wildlife both here and also help fund conservation projects abroad. And one of the things that I'd love to see more and more schools do is to form partnerships with nature clubs from countries where the wildlife occurs, if it's not in the United States, because there are these nature clubs and they'd love to share their experiences with students here in the States. So forming that kind of linkage or that partnership would be great to see, and both sides would benefit.
As a director of Biodiversity and Wildlife Solutions Program, do you do any hands-on work, or do you do mainly administrative work?
I do a lot of hands-on, and particularly what I talked about today in Africa. I go over and help with designing and testing our anti-poaching equipment, for example. That's front and center right now because of the poaching crisis. And other projects, I'm involved in the actual research as well. So I try to be as much hands-on as possible.
Was there a moment when you knew that this type of work is what you wanted to do?
Yes, but it didn't come right away. So I'm one of these late-blooming biologists. I had an interest when I was, I don't know, maybe probably your age or a little bit younger. I really loved dinosaurs. And I actually wrote a book about dinosaurs and had a friend illustrate it. And we sent it to the head of the Museum of Natural History in New York, who was a dinosaur expert. Unfortunately, our teacher didn't tell us that he'd already died 3 years before we finished the book. But that thankfully she didn't tell us, so we finished it anyway. And then I kind of lost my interest in nature. I don't know why, but it resurfaced again when I was a junior in college. And so I had a lot of catching up to do because I started out in college as in a filmmaking program without any science background. So I had to shift gears in a hurry, and that was a really hard thing to do. But I'm also very glad that I did, because I think being in school in a filmmaking program where I took a lot of English courses as well, I think that what's helped me in writing these books is to almost imagine them as films and my characters in them. So I think it's paid off in the long run.
If the story had taken place somewhere else, where would it be and why?
It's a really good question. You know, part of the reason why I think people have told me this book has some appeal is because it's about a place that nobody really knows about. Not many people go to this part of Nepal. It's really isolated. And it's for that reason that this opened up a whole new world to a lot of readers, and it's a unique world, so I guess there aren't many places where this is duplicated. I suppose there are more places in India and Thailand this could happen, or Sri Lanka, where there are where is this tradition of keeping elephants and used in either, in this case, research. It's not very many places, but typically for ceremonial events, or elephants were used quite a bit in the old days in logging in Burma and in India. And so I suppose it could have been written there.
What was the most interesting part about living in Nepal?
Well, for me, of course, it was the wildlife. And it was such a great adventure. The first time I went, I was 21 years old. And it was actually my first trip out of the United States, my first passport. So instead of going to Europe or Mexico, I got a passport and a visa to go to Nepal for 2 years. And it was 1975, and it was such a different world. It was still very much a medieval kingdom, so it was like going back in time. In Kathmandu, the capital, there were very few cars. There were lots and lots of cows on the road, because cows are considered holy. There were only probably under a couple of hundred vehicles. Everybody was on foot or on bicycles or rickshaws. I felt like I was going back a century. And then when I got out to my post, where the borderlands is, I felt like I was going back 2 centuries.
Did you have any troubles in Nepal?
Most of the troubles were, I would say, being sick the first time. It's a country where there's a lot of diseases, and so sometimes staying healthy, you have to be a little extra careful, and I was probably less careful than I could have been in my first time there, where I drank the water with the villagers and probably didn't take as much care as I could have. And that's often how most people get sick in very poor countries, is where the water is not as pure as it is here, and you get illnesses related to that. So I could have been more careful. That would have been smart.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great.